greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on hospitals when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it and I know it. Now, he said this back in 1880. 1880, he said this. And he went on to say, there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers, the Bushes and the Bundys, the Carnegies and the Vanderbilts. I say it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and let's survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible Prophecy, and the New World Order, call and order my 4-hour compact disc package. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we were talking about the 10 things that the hospitals aren't about to tell you. Well, there's an 11th thing here that we're talking about today, and we started it last time. It's called Dumped on Skid Row. Comes from an article from www.cbsnews.com. The date on this story here was 5-17-07. So if you're looking for a date, it's 5, that's May 17th, 2007. Came from 60 Minutes, Dumped on Skid Row. Remember, this lady's name was Carol Ann Reyes, and the tape shows a 63-year-old homeless woman named Carol Ann Reyes wandering in the street. Well, the pictures may seem unremarkable, but the story that goes with it's very disturbing. Reyes had just been discharged from the Kaiser Permanente Bellflower Hospital, where after taking a fall, she had been treated for 3 days. Now, the hospital confirms that she was put in a taxi, and the driver was told to take her to Skid Row. But why was she wearing little more than a hospital gown? Well, because the hospital admits they lost her clothes, and then they send her away without pants or even shoes. They did, however, give her a diaper. Well, that was big of them. The hospital confirmed she was put in a taxi, and the taxi driver was told to take her to Skid Row. Why was she wearing little or more than a hospital gown? Well, because the hospital lost her clothes. The cab came this way. He did a U-turn, pulled around, and stopped. The driver didn't even get out of the car. The back door opened, and this little lady got out in her hospital gown, says Reverend Andy Bales, who runs the Union Rescue Mission, the biggest shelter down on Skid Row in Los Angeles. Skid Row is a 50-square-block area, home to some 11,000 people, with the highest concentration of homeless in the country. Asked if he was surprised to see Reyes get out of the taxi, Reverend Bales says, "I was stunned and shocked and frozen for a moment. I couldn't believe my eyes. She was really confused." She was confused, investigators later found out, because she was suffering from dementia. That shouldn't have come as a surprise to Kaiser Hospital officials. Their own medical records show Reyes was disoriented as to time and place. Her speech was slurred. She had extremely high blood pressure and a persistent cough and fever. Even with these medical problems, they decided to discharge her and sent her to the streets of Skid Row. They're dumping a 62-year-old woman with dementia in the heart of Skid Row. That's what's going on. And it's shocking. And it's criminal, argues Rocky Delgadio, the Los Angeles city attorney. His office is investigating more than 50 cases of alleged homeless dumping on Skid Row. Now, these may be the perfect victims, because a homeless individual dumped on Skid Row disappears into the chaos of Skid Row within minutes. And it's hard for us to find them and then get the evidence that we need. Now, what should hospitals do with the homeless patients? The California Health Code requires all hospitals to make appropriate arrangements for post-hospital care and for continuing health care requirements before discharging any patient. Kaiser did not do that in Carol Ann Ray's case. She was sent to Skid Row last March without any medication or instructions for follow-up care. When asked what it's like down there, Delgadio said, "Cardboard shanties, it's a dangerous place, both physically, as well as the drug dealers that congregate on Skid Row, gangs that come here to find easy prey. Not the kind of place that an elderly woman with dementia should be," Cooper remarks. "No, in fact, if she'd made it around the corner, she might not be with us today," Delgadio says. Well, Carol Ann Reyes is with us today because a worker from Bales Mission rescued her from the street. She's now under the protection of a court-appointed conservator. She suffers from mild dementia and other medical problems. The conservator allowed 60 Minutes to videotape her meeting with her lawyer, but not to ask her any questions. Her lawyers have filed suit against Kaiser Hospital. You gotta pause here for a minute. Here's a homeless lady. She doesn't have a car to drive, a house to live in, or health insurance, but she's got lawyers to sue the hospital. She's got a legal staff. She doesn't have a car, doesn't have clothes, doesn't have a home. Isn't that just special? Well, before she was hospitalized, Reyes had been sleeping in a park 16 miles away from the crime-ridden streets of Skid Row. "Sometimes individuals end up here and are just released from county jail," explained City Attorney Jose Egurbide, sorry, Jose, if I pronounced your name incorrectly. Anyway, he's a deputy city attorney there in Los Angeles, and he said that he investigates hospital dumping cases and showed 60 Minutes around Skid Row. Egurbide is part of a city effort to clean up Skid Row. Asked what the problems are that people there are dealing with, Egurbide says that the people living on the street, and they're living on the street here, Anderson, about over 40% of them have mental illness issues, and you know, over 50% of them have some type of addiction, heroin, crack, meth, Skid Row, drug addiction. Well, he said, spend a few hours there, like 60 minutes did, and you quickly see how chaotic these streets are. Despite a heavy law enforcement present, police wage a constant battle to maintain some semblance of order. During 60 minutes' visit to just one block of Skid Row, one man passed out. No one knew whether he had hit his head, overdosed on drugs, or had some illness. So they called an ambulance for him. Meanwhile, the police officer on the scene had to leave because there was a stabbing a short time ago on the block, and he believes that the suspect in the stabbing was standing about 200 feet away from where Cooper and the 60 Minutes team were standing at the time. Violence is nothing new to those living on Skid Row, and neither are stories about hospital dumping. "Have you heard about this dumping?" Cooper asked one man. "Oh, hell yeah, it's nothing new," the man replied. "It just got noticed because they've been bringing them down in their hospital gowns." Homeless people, however, don't make the strongest witnesses in court. So to get hard evidence of dumping, workers at several shelters, including the Union Rescue Mission, installed special cameras on the street to capture the crime in action. They call them dumping cams. Now, this was not to stop crime. It was intentionally set up to spot hospital drop-offs or to track hospital drop-offs, Reverend Bales explains. So what's the importance of the cameras? Well, says Bales, you know, people have talked about this and has been happening for more than 20 years, but it wasn't until America saw a hospital drop-off on camera that it brought the kind of attention that it has brought. After the video of Ray's dumping was made public, Diana Bonda, a Kaiser vice president, showed up at a Skid Row press conference. And she said, "I want to apologize to this patient, and I want to sincerely apologize. I want to apologize as well to the community, and I want to apologize to my colleagues, to those of you gathered here today. It's not in keeping with the policies of Kaiser Permanente," she said. Kaiser officials acknowledged arrangements should have been made to care for Ray's at a mission. They declined a 60 Minutes request for an interview, but they said in a statement that from now on they'll use vans with hospital staff instead of taxis to deliver discharged patients to the missions. It wouldn't have mattered if they put Carol Ann Ray's in a limousine. They still dumped her on Skid Row, argues City Attorney Delgadio. This past November, Delgadio filed civil and criminal charges against Kaiser Hospital. The complaint charges Kaiser with false imprisonment and dependent adult endangerment relating to Kaiser's shameful and abusive conduct in the dumping of Carol Ann Ray's on Skid Row, he said during a press conference. I'm going to underline this false imprisonment here. We'll come back and we'll discuss this here in a minute. After all, we Americans are communists practicing socialized medicine here, so we might as well understand the terms that we're using. Now, you might think with all the attention that Ray's case got, the hospitals would be particularly careful in how they discharge homeless patients. But just a few months later, another hospital's treatment of another patient made headlines. His name was Gabino Olvera. He's a 41-year-old paraplegic. He lives in his car, which is equipped with hand controls. He keeps his wheelchair on the seat. Olvera got into a minor traffic accident on February the 7th and was brought to Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital and treated for bruises. Hospital officials say he was discharged in the middle of the night and then taken by ambulance to an address Olvera told them was his home. That address turned out to be the Midnight Mission, one of the oldest on Skid Row. Now, the mission's dumping camera showed paramedics bringing Olvera, strapped to a gurney, inside. Well, the staff inside the mission said they couldn't care for a paraplegic, so paramedics wheeled him back to the ambulance and took him back to Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital. And that's when Olvera's troubles really began. The hospital acknowledged that he sat in the waiting room for 8 hours. When the morning shift took over, he was put in a van and then sent right back to the same Skid Row address. He never made it that far. 4 blocks away from the Midnight Mission, he was dumped on the street. Now, Deputy City Attorney Eagerbride arrived with police minutes later. The witnesses were saying a van pulled up the individual, you know, basically fell out of it, and while the driver was just standing by and, you know, not doing anything to help him, and, you know, was literally crawling on his hands, a paraplegic man, no use of his legs, and the van just sped off. Eagerbide explains, no wheelchair, no walker, no empathy whatsoever for this individual by the driver, apparently. That was the wrong thing to do, obviously, says Kaylor Schamberger, the head of Hollywood Presbyterian. Schamberger says the woman who drove the van made a big mistake. She violated hospital policy. She should not have dropped the patient off at that location. She should not have dropped the patient off at that location. I guess that means she should have dropped him off at a different location where there was no camera, where there was no evidence, where there were no witnesses. I guess that's what that sentence means. Your hospital left this man, Gabino Olvera, on the street. He's a paraplegic. Didn't give him a walker. Didn't give him a wheelchair. Let me pause here. And then, is that possible, Cooper asks? Well, Anderson, let me tell you straight up that we're as shocked and outraged about this incident as anybody, he replies. So the hospital didn't think that a paraplegic man would need a wheelchair, Cooper asks. Well, the driver asked at that time, you know, what about your wheelchair? And he said, don't worry about it, I have one at my home. Just take me there, Schamberger says. His home was a car, Cooper remarks. Well, we didn't know that at the time. When he came in, he gave us an address and told us that was his home, and that was the address that we instructed the driver to take him to, Schamberger replies. That address was the Midnight Mission. The hospital's night shift workers knew that because they'd tried to take him there, but Schamberger says they never told the morning shift. Clearly, the communications between the two shifts is one area that fell down. And we have implemented a number of new policies to address those issues, Schamberger says. All I can tell you, Anderson, is that this hospital has very strict policies with regard to how we transport patients, and this particular situation was an anomaly. How strict, though, can the policies really be if they seem to have, at least in this case, been pretty much ignored, Cooper asks. We're dealing with human nature here, and a bad decision was made on the part of the van driver. And she's the only one who's made a bad decision here, Cooper asked. Well, she's the one that made the decision to drop the patient off, Schamberger argues. And to those who say that you're basically making a scapegoat out of this low-paid van driver, I don't think anybody is trying to make a scapegoat out of anybody, Schamberger replied. Has anybody else been disciplined? Anyone else who, you know, the various shifts of the people in the emergency room who saw this patient? Have they been disciplined? Schamberger replied, no. Well, Schamberger points out that hospital care for the homeless is only a part of a much larger problem. In Los Angeles County, about 88,000 people don't have a roof over their heads on any given day. He says there simply aren't enough shelters and clinics to care for all of them. When these people are discharged from a medical facility, they need a place to go, and we need a place to take them that can accommodate their needs. And these resources are just lacking in this community, Schamberger says. Asked if he thinks the hospitals are just an easy target, Schamberger says, I think we're being unfairly pursued in these particular cases. After all, you know, we're here to take care of their medical needs, not their housing needs. And that's an article here put out by www.cbsnews.com, stories 2007-517 from 60 Minutes. Now, what is this thing called hospital dumping? You know, I mean, it sounded really gross to me to take this little old lady, Carol Ann Reyes, wandering in the streets here. And they've got cameras down here on Skid Row. Who came up with the idea to set up these cameras down here to catch hospitals dumping these patients down here on Skid Row? What's that all about? So, in reading the article here, I mean, you ought to get a copy of it and take a look at it. I kind of analyzed it and I said to myself, well, what would you do if you were running the hospital? You know, you're the hospital administrator. Now, in comes this little old lady, and she's been brought in with an ambulance, and she was picked up on the street, and so you treat her for 3 days. And you find out in 3 days, this lady doesn't have any health insurance. She doesn't have any money. She's not going to pay you for the 3 days of services that you've already given her. And at the end of 3 days, you've stabilized her. I mean, she fell down. Somebody brought her in the hospital. Okay, so she doesn't have any broken bones. But in the meantime, you lost her clothes, lost her shoes, and you need to get rid of her. She doesn't have a home to go to. She doesn't have any money in the bank. She's a mental case. She's got mild dementia. What are you going to do with her? Well, come on. What are you going to do with her? Well, you say, well, we're not going to dump her on the street. Well, okay. Well, now tell me what you're going to do with her. Where are you going to put her? The only logical thing is you've got to go out and buy a house for her or rent an apartment. And since she's got dementia, she needs to be taken care of, so you need to hire somebody to take care of her. Now, here's your problem if you're the hospital administrator other than just the average run-of-the-mill American communist. You see, you're running an institution here, and hopefully, at the end of the month, you sold more services than you expended money. In other words, at the end of the month, you've spent $3 million, and you had to have taken in $3 million to pay those expenses, because the nurses that work in those hospitals, and the doctors, and the cleaning people, and the undocumented aliens, you know, that are working in these institutions, all expect to get a paycheck on Friday. And all of the suppliers, you know, the people that wash the linens, and the people that supply the hospital, you know, with food, and bring in, you know, the supplies that this hospital needs, they all expect to get paid. The manufacturer that makes those hospital gowns and supplies the hospital with those diapers, you know, that they gave to that lady, they all expect to get paid. And you're the hospital administrator, and you've got to write the checks and pay for all of those expenses. Now, it just so happens that there's 88,000 people like Carol Ann Reyes walking around on the streets of Los Angeles. And those 88,000 people, all homeless, all penniless, all with drug addictions or some other medical problem, have medical needs just like you and I do. Now, normal people, that is the average ordinary Joe Sixpack American, has health insurance. And so he's walking down the street, he falls over, and he's kicking and writhing on the sidewalk, and so somebody's walking by, maybe it's you. And you see me on the streets, writhing in pain on the sidewalk, and you say, oh my God, I've got to do something for this guy. Something tells you you've got to do something. What do? You whip out your cell phone and you call 911. Don't you? And you say, well, I'm standing down here at the corner of Hollywood and Vine, and there's this guy laying on the sidewalk here, and he's kicking and screaming and in obvious pain, and it looks like, I don't know if he's been hit by a car, having a heart attack or what it is, but you better send an ambulance or do something. So the guy at 911, who's getting paid $9.37 an hour, does his job, and he calls an ambulance. The guy driving the ambulance makes a little more. He's a paramedic, so he gets $14.62 an hour, jumps in his ambulance with his partner, and he rushes down to Hollywood and Vine, and there I am, laying on the sidewalk, kicking and screaming, because I'm in great pain, and so they scoop me up, stick me in the ambulance, and haul me off to the hospital. They take me into the ER, and they look me all over, and they come to the conclusion I've had a heart attack. They whip out my wallet, and they say, well, look at this. The guy's got a Blue Cross Blue Shield card in here. They admit me to the hospital, put a little band on my wrist, treat me for my heart attack. Things go along pretty good. Pretty soon they discharge me, and Blue Cross Blue Shield pays the bill. Now, you as the administrator of the hospital are very happy because the bill was $11,000. And now Blue Cross sends a check for $11,000. And now you've got $11,000 in the bank that you can write the checks to pay the ambulance guys to come out and pick me up. And pay the nurses and doctors to patch me up. And to pay for all the supplies that I used. And you hope make a $3,000 or $4,000 profit on the transaction. Now, along comes Carol Ann Reyes. Now, she's got the same medical needs that I've got. She's got a problem. She needs to be treated. But she didn't have any money. And evidently, those of us in society expect this hospital, just a business, a profit-making operation, you know, kind of like your local Lexus dealer. Let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's suppose that Carol Ann Reyes is walking down the street. Now she's homeless, and we presume that if she doesn't have a home, she probably doesn't have a new Lexus. She walks into the Lexus dealer and she says, "I need a new Lexus because I don't have one." Would we expect the Lexus dealer to say, "Oh my God, here's this homeless lady who doesn't have a Lexus. Here, lady, let us fulfill your needs. Here is a $40,000 automobile." Because this lady can run up a $40,000 hospital bill, and somehow we expect the hospital to take this $40,000 hospital bill and eat it. We don't expect the Ford dealer or the Chevy dealer or the Lexus dealer to take it in the shorts and give her a $40,000 car. Now, this lady's homeless. Well, then, shouldn't we take her down to the Holiday Inn and take her in and sign her up and put her in a room? The Holiday Inn, after all, they've got lots of rooms. And we all practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. Now, if we can practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need for this lady and for this paraplegic's needs, I mean, I don't deny that the paraplegic has a need. I don't think anybody would sit here and put a stumbling block before this guy that can't walk. But is it the hospital's fault that he can't walk? Is it the hospital's fault that he's homeless? Is it the hospital's fault that he doesn't have any money and doesn't have Blue Cross Blue Shield like I've got? You know, let's think about it pragmatically. Now, the hospitals are faced with a problem here. And I'm not here to defend hospitals. But I'm a businessman, and I can see what the hospital's first problem is. It's balancing the books at the end of the month. Because if these hospitals have to treat 88,000 patients free, then they have to charge 88,000 paying customers twice as much money to balance the books at the end of the month. Can you all follow that? So I don't know whether the hospital should charge all the rest of us twice as much money. Enough money to cover our expenses and then enough money to cover the expenses of the homeless. Or whether the taxpayers should pay that. Or some other entity, or maybe nobody or none of the above. I don't know. I didn't come here to philosophize. I just came here to give you a report. Dumped on Skid Row. 60 Minutes did a show. And they said, "Look at this atrocity going on in America." And of course, the hospital is the one that dumped them on the street. My question is, well, where else did the hospital have to take them? They didn't have a home to take them to. They didn't have a business address to take them to. And these people, you know, when somebody comes into your establishment in a hospital, and you're in the treatment business, you're in the hospital treatment business, nobody asks you on the street, "Do you have Blue Cross? Do you have money? Are you homeless?" And furthermore, let's suppose that somebody's on the street and they just had a heart attack. Should you be asking this person, "Excuse me, before we take you to the hospital, do you have the money to pay for this? Before we take you to the Lexus..." I mean, what if the hospital took this person to the local Lexus dealer? And they pull up to the Lexus dealer and they say, "Well, here, we've got this person in the back of the ambulance here. And we don't know what's wrong with them, but we do know this. They don't have an automobile. And we think that this is a logical place for you to deliver this person, or for us to deliver this person, because they're homeless and don't have an automobile. So we brought them here to solve one of the problems, give them an automobile." What if the ambulance, instead of going to the hospital, took this person to the Holiday Inn and said, "Look, this person's homeless. And they're having a medical problem, but they're homeless, and so we need to solve this person's problem." And you're sitting there saying, "Well, why would we take them to the Holiday Inn? Well, I'm asking you, well, why would you take them to the hospital? They haven't got any more money to pay for the hospital services than they have for the Holiday Inn services or for the Lexus services. So why would you take them? Why would you take them to the hospital? Why don't you take them down to the movie theater or take them somewhere else? Well, because they're having medical problems and need to go to the hospital. Well, that makes all the sense in the world. I agree with you. Now, why should the hospital take it in the shorts any more than the Lexus dealer or the Holiday Inn or the movie theater? Why shouldn't they get paid for the services that they render? Now, when the 3 days is up and this lady, you know, who fell down now can stand up and she can walk around, is she going to retire in the hospital for the rest of her life because she's homeless? She didn't have a home the day she fell down. She doesn't have a home 3 days after the hospital has treated her. Now you're going to sit there and say, well, at least they could have done is to give her back her clothes. Well, I agree. That was a mistake. They lost her clothes and they lost her shoes. And evidently, we would expect that if the hospital who gave you 3 days worth of services and where I'm located here in the hillbilly country, when you go to the hospital here, it costs you $500 a day. So for 3 days, it's $1,500. That's the hospital stay. And I don't know what the doctor's going to charge, but a little bit more. A 3 day stay in the hospital here in Springfield, Missouri is a $2,000 or $3,000 bill. Now the hospital just gave this lady $3,000 worth of services. What was she wearing? A $3,000 Hickey Freeman suit with wingtip shoes when she came into the hospital. I mean, hell, she was sleeping on a park bench. We could have gone down to Salvation Army for $10 and probably outfitted her pretty nicely. But we didn't. But I guess maybe we should have. But I got to ask the question, well, why should the hospital go down and pick up new clothes or a new outfit? You know, maybe it was Easter time and she needed a new outfit. You see where we're going with this, boys and girls? We have socialized medicine here in America. And Congress has enacted a law back in the 1986, I believe it was, called anti-dumping. And the hospital can't do this. And this is why they're setting up these cameras out here, because the hospital's caught between a rock and a hard spot. Let's suppose that we did this. When the ambulance brings a victim to the Lexus dealer, Congress enacts a law and says the Lexus dealer cannot dump these people. They have to take care of them. How would you like a law like that? Let's try it on you. The law says that if you find somebody on the street kicking and screaming and they're having a hard time and you call 911 on behalf of that person, you have to pay the bill. How would you like that? Because that's what we're saying to the hospital. When somebody has a medical need, you have to pay for it. Now that's quite a leap, isn't it? And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide on the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and we recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about hospitals, and there's an aspect of hospitalization here called dumping. There's another article here that I thought I'd share with you. It came from USA Today, and print this, clickability.com. USA Today, print this, clickability.com. You could probably just go to Google and, put in dumped on Skid Row. L.A. targets Kaiser Permanente and dumping of homeless patients on Skid Row. Hospital liability for failing to comply with the Federal Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act in Florida. I mean, there's a number of acts that have been enacted here. Congress came along in 1986 and said, well, we're not going to let you hospitals do that. You can't just dump these people out on the street. I'm just a businessman. I walk along and say, well, what else were you going to do with them? Now, Congress comes along, and they're real big on spending other people's money. And there isn't anything that government can't do half as well for twice as much. So if you want a government solution to this problem, be prepared to pay twice as much and get the job done half as well. I'm not here as an advocate for government or for socialized medicine or an advocate for hospitals. I'm just a reporter here looking at the problem. 88,000 people in Los Angeles all need medical care. All of them. And that's because these people don't eat very well. And remember, 40% of them are on drugs. Now, you know, if you're on crack or cocaine or methamphetamines and marijuana and so on, you probably don't have the greatest health in the world. And people that don't have good health get sick. And when people get sick, there's pain. And when there's pain, people, they cry a lot and they shake and they writhe around. And then, of course, that makes the rest of us feel uncomfortable. Well, just picture it. You're walking down the street and there's some guy laying on the street, and he's doubled up in pain, and he's crying, and, oh, help me, oh, please help me. Well, what are you going to do? Just walk on by? Now, I remember one time my daddy and I were driving down the road, and I'm a little kid, about 9 years old, I think, 9 or 10, and we're driving down the road, and this is sometime after World War II, and this there's a guy along the road over there with his thumb out, he's hitchhiking. And my dad just drove right on by. And so a little while later, there's another guy, he's hitchhiking, and he's got his thumb out. And so my dad just drove right on by. Well, after about the second or third guy, I said to my dad, Dad, how come you don't stop and give those people a ride? Because we got plenty of room in the back seat. And so my dad said to me, he said, well, son, I don't know those people. And I said, well, but they're on the road walking and they don't have a car. And it's hot out and it's uncomfortable. And they need a ride. And then my dad, he's driving down the road, he said, well, I don't deny that they need a ride, son. It's pretty obvious that it's hot outside. That's why we got the windows down. And it's pretty obvious that those folks need a ride. I said, but I don't see why I should give them a ride. And so I'm just a little kid, just a little communist kid, you know. And I said, well, but, you know, they don't have a car and we do. So my dad looked over at me and he said, well, why don't they have a car? And I said, I don't know. And my dad said, I don't know either. He said, I suppose that they made a choice in life, that there was something more important to them that they spent their money on. Down on Skid Row, there's probably things down there that are more important, you know, like crack, cocaine, marijuana, methamphetamines, and these illegal drugs are probably more important to these people than paying rent or buying an automobile or living like the rest of us do by paying insurance premiums on our Blue Cross Blue Shield. I guess that those people down on Skid Row, kind of like the people that we were passing on the highway with their thumbs out, had choices to make, just like my dad did. So my dad pointed out to me, he said, well, son, I thought that an automobile was pretty important. And so I went to work in the sawmill, and I worked real hard, and I sweat a lot. And it's very uncomfortable working. And when you get to be a big boy, and you get out in the world, you'll find out that working is very hard, tedious, uncomfortable. You're not going to like it. But it's something, it's a duty in life, it's something that has to be done. If we're going to have automobiles and homes, somebody has to build those houses. Somebody has to build these automobiles. And I have to pay somebody to build this automobile. It didn't just happen. There were people in the factory, and those people wanted to get paid at the end of every week. And the factory that built the automobile, they had to buy the steel, and they had to buy the glass, and buy the rubber tires, and all these people had to work, and they had to sweat, and they had to put this car together, and they sold it to me. And for me to buy it, I had to earn money, and I had to work, and I had to sweat, and I had to do without. I had to walk for a long time and ride the bus. And I saved my money and I bought this car. And it costs a lot of money to buy gasoline, buy tires and oil, and to keep it in repair. And it's a choice that I made. And to me, this car is important. And I don't want to stop and pick up some guy and find out that he's a robber or that he's a criminal who's going to stick a gun in my face and steal my car and steal my money and maybe kill me and kill you too. And I don't see any point in taking the risk. I don't see any need for me to take a risk. I can't tell who good guys are and bad guys are. And I don't want to take the risk of picking up that hitchhiker on the highway. I don't know him. I don't owe him anything. And he had a choice to make. And his choice was to spend his money on something other than an automobile. So I guess he wanted to walk. I guess Carol Ann Reyes, nice lady that she is, wandering in the streets, decided that whatever she wanted to spend her money on, however she wanted to live her life at age 62, she made those choices. She was a young person, 18 years old at one time, wasn't she? And didn't she decide whether she wanted to smoke or not? Didn't she decide to spend her money on cigarettes and whiskey and wild men and bars and bar rooms and drugs or houses and automobiles and Blue Cross Blue Shield and health insurance? I mean, you know, life is filled with choices. And a lot of times people make bad choices. I guess they make bad choices. I don't know if some guy living on Skid Row, sleeping on a park bench, shooting up with heroin is making a bad decision. Hell, it might be a great decision. He may be sitting there looking at me saying, look at that fool. He goes out every day and he works and sweats and does all those things that are uncomfortable. And look at me. I'm living the life of Riley. Why, I'm shooting up with heroin. I feel good all the time. I don't have any responsibilities. I don't have to work and do unpleasant things. And I'm just happy as a clam at high tide. I don't know. And I'm not here to run down crack addicts and heroin addicts on Skid Row. I mean, if those people want to live like that, I suppose that's their choice. Now, let's suppose I'm walking down the street, and this heroin addict over here overdosed on his heroin, and he's in some kind of convulsions, and he's having some kind of trouble. And he's doubled up on the street, or maybe he's run out of heroin. Maybe he's having a withdrawal or something, you know. Excuse me, folks, but do I have some duty or obligation to give this guy a shot of heroin? Should I run down to the local heroin dealer and say, oh my God, there's this guy on the street having withdrawal symptoms, and here's $150, give me a shot of smack here so I can run down and alleviate this guy's problem? Do I have that duty? Do you have that duty? Does the Kaiser Hospital have that duty? Does the Lexus dealer have that duty? Does the Holiday Inn have that duty? And yet, when you're walking down the street and you see this, aren't you going to whip out your cell phone and call 911 and say, send an ambulance? Hell, if you're so concerned about this guy having withdrawal on the sidewalk, why don't you run down and spend $150 and get this guy a shot of smack so he can come back here and alleviate his symptoms? Instead of calling 911, why don't you go out here and do something constructive for this poor guy laying on the sidewalk over here? How come Kaiser Hospital has to do it? Now, somebody's going to send me an email here, and they're going to say, you know, Gordon, you're really insensitive to the pain and the suffering that goes on around you. I don't buy into that crap at all. Life is filled with choices to make, and some people make a choice, and they sacrifice, and they pay $10,000 a year to buy health insurance. And they go to the job site every day, and they work, and they pay a portion of it. I think it's a bad investment. I don't have any health insurance. None. Zero. Zilch. I don't. Now, let's suppose that we put the shoe on the other foot. I've made my choice in life. My choice is to take that $10,000 a year and spend it on something else. That's my choice. I made it. Now, as a result of that, you know, life being what it is, I may be walking down the street and have a heart attack. And I'm laying on the sidewalk. Does the Kaiser Hospital have any more duty to pick me up off the sidewalk and to take me in and spend thousands of dollars worth of doctor's time and nurse's time and hospital funds and monies to treat me any more than Carol Ann Reyes or this paraplegic? Well, I want to tell you, I don't think so. Honest to God, I don't believe it. Now, when I'm laying on the sidewalk and I'm writhing in pain, I am going to reap the reward for my actions. My decision today not to buy health insurance is my decision to make. Just like my decision to smoke cigarettes was my decision to make. And when I was about 13, 14 years old, I decided that I wanted to smoke. So I went out and started smoking. It was my decision. I made it. I did it. Now, John Wayne came down with lung cancer. He smoked all of his life. He came down with lung cancer and he died from it. I don't know if John made the right decision or the wrong decision. From my vantage point in life, looking at his life, I would say John Wayne made a bad decision when he decided to smoke. But hell, I made the same decision. I went out and I decided to smoke, and I smoked. Until one day, I read an article in the Reader's Digest, and I woke up and I said, you know, I think I'm going to quit smoking because this smoking causes cancer, and cancer looks like it's a very nasty disease that I don't want to get. And I looked at smoking kind of like I look at sleeping on park benches and shooting up with heroin. The ultimate end of this process is something that I don't want. And so I have molded my behavior so that I can get out of life what it is that I want, or as much of it as I possibly can. And I'm sure that Carol Ann Reyes and this paraplegic guy down here are doing the same thing. Now, the paraplegic guy had a bad break in life. He had an accident. Something happened, and he was injured, and now he's a paraplegic. I think he ought to be taken care of. Excuse me, but where's his family? That's number one. Because I've got a son, and he has epilepsy. And the taxpayers, this is like a tale story, or the Carla Smith lady, you know, she called up one day and she said, Dirk, so I live in a small community, and so our local welfare lady down here, she knows or she heard that Dirk had epilepsy, and so she called, and she said, heard you had epilepsy, and he said, yeah. And so she said, well, do you know that you're entitled to a lot of benefits? And Dirk said, well, no, I didn't know that. And she said, yeah, you can get welfare and food stamps, and you can get a paid up rent and all these kind of benefits. And this is back about 1985. I mean, we're talking about 20 years ago or more. And at that time, it was worth $2,500 a month. So in 1985, they would pay Dirk $2,500 a month. All he needed to do was go get a Social Security number. Now, my boy Dirk does not have a Social Security number. Never has had. He has never had a Social Security number. Doesn't have one today, and he still has epilepsy. Now, he cannot work out here in the normal society. I mean, he can't work down here at the local insurance agency because he has seizures. And, you know, if you walked into the local insurance agency, and here's my boy Dirk working in there, and he had a seizure and knocked over the desk, knocked over the chairs, knocked over the lamps, and you're sitting in the office, and you know, just scare the living hell out of you. And so for that reason, he's kind of like this paraplegic. I mean, he's totally handicapped. I mean, this guy just can't function out in the real world. But he has a family, and I'm part of his family, and I support him, and I put him to work here in the school, and he works here in the school. He works here at home, and he makes his living here. I don't know if you knew that or not, but my boy Dirk, he makes his living here. And he pays his tithes, and he is a contributor to society. Now, he could not work out at General Motors or the Lexus dealer, but he can work here. We can take care of him here, and we do. And I gotta ask, where's this paraplegic's family? Why aren't they taking care of him? Because, you see, in the scripture, there is a welfare system laid out in the scripture. And under that welfare system, the third tithe goes to taking care of those people that can't take care of themselves. They could be taken care of by the church, as we call it today. That's the way we used to do things here in America before we got into the welfare business. Families number one, and then the church number two, and the state never came into the game at all, you know, under our constitution, under our system of things. So first of all, people take care of themselves. Secondly, their families take care of them. And then third, when there's nobody else, it's the church that takes care of them. I got to ask, where's Carol Ann Reyes? Does she go to church? Oh, she doesn't go to church because she believes in evolution, because she's a crack addict and lives on a park bench. Okay. Well, that's her choice in life, isn't it? And the paraplegic. Oh, he doesn't have a family? Oh, what'd he do? Give him the finger and tell him to kiss off because he didn't want to practice the fifth commandment that says honor your father and mother? Is it because his family doesn't practice the patriarchal system? Is it because he went to public school and he too is an evolutionist? And where was his guardian angel when this accident took place? You know, that accident wasn't supposed to take place. His angel was supposed to protect him from time and chance. Is it because he doesn't practice the Ten Commandments? He doesn't practice the law of God, and that's the proximate cause of his injury? I don't know. I don't know the guy. I don't know what he does or what his practices are. But you know, in life, boys and girls, there are choices to be made. And these people all make choices. And it looks like to me that what we're seeing as a society is that when somebody's in pain, the hospital has to alleviate their pain, and they have to pay for it. I don't know why the Lexus dealer doesn't have to alleviate these people's pain. I don't know why it is that we don't enact laws that say when somebody is standing on the side of the highway with his thumb out, you must stop and give him a ride. Because if you don't, it's the equivalent of a hospital dumping somebody on Skid Row. You've got a car, and you owe it to this guy to give him a ride. Somehow or another, we haven't come to the conclusion that we owe some guy a ride because he doesn't have a car. But we have come to the conclusion that the hospital owes these people medical services because they're in pain. 88,000 people are homeless. Somehow or another, we have not come to the conclusion that the Holiday Inn or the Radisson Inn or that the landlords of Los Angeles owe it to these people to bring them in and to furnish them housing because they've got housing and these people don't have it at their expense. We haven't come to that conclusion. I don't know why. If hospitals have to alleviate pain and suffering from people's medical problems, I can't for the life of me understand why landlords and hotels shouldn't alleviate homelessness. And why Lexus dealers and Ford dealers shouldn't alleviate carlessness. I mean, it looks like to me that there's a choice for people to make. Now, most of us have cars, most of us have homes, and most of us have health insurance. And it's true that a lot of people don't have health insurance. So should it be then that the health insurance company should provide health insurance for all of the people that don't have health insurance? Why should the insurance companies provide health insurance for people that don't pay the premiums? Those people want to spend their money on something other than health insurance, and I'm one of them. I don't want health insurance. I don't want to spend my money on health insurance. But I don't think that the health insurance industry owes it to me to insure me. I don't think that you taxpayers out there owe it to me to put me on some kind of mandatory health insurance program because I'm one of the 44 million people that don't have health insurance. I don't think you owe it to me to do that. So I don't think the Holiday Inn owes me a roof over my head. I don't think the Lexus dealer owes me an automobile. I don't think that a landlord owes me an apartment, and I don't think that you owe it to me to furnish me with health insurance. Just leave me to hell alone, would you? Now that's my choice in life. And I would say that you've got a deeper problem over here than being dumped on Skid Row. The people on Skid Row, those 11,000 people that live in that 50 block area, have made a choice in life. And that choice may come back and bite them in the butt. And it may be in the form of a health problem. Or a homeless problem. Or a crime problem. You know, those are the choices that we make. When we decide to smoke and we get lung cancer, that's a problem. But we brought it on ourselves. When we drink too much and we get cirrhosis of the liver, that's a problem. But we brought it on ourselves. And boys and girls, it's my view that when we bring problems on ourselves, we ought not to look to government. We ought not to look to the hospital or the health insurance industry and then blame everybody else for our proximate cause of our own injuries. Well, we're about out of time again. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide daily over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Well, our time's about up. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.